We'll do a couple of these and then we'll go into a meditation. So take the focus that you have and go straight into a breath meditation, following your breathing either in your nostrils or in your chest or in your abdomen. That was very still. Great. So, we're going to start with a brief history lesson, and I'm going to let you educate me a little, I hope. We're going to look at the cultural structures over the last 600 years, and we're going to look at the changes. So if you think about it, what was between, you know, basically in the European cultures, what was the primary form of government 500-600 years ago? So in a monarchy, how much choice did you have about who was going to rule? How much choice did you have about what your profession was going to be? Very little. 500 years ago, 600 years ago, very little, next to none. How much choice did you have about what village you lived in? So think about it. There was very little choice. There was very little autonomy. But can you see some advantages of that? And what would they be? What would be the advantages of knowing who was going to rule and where you were going to live? What's that?
It's less stressful.
Why?
It's like wearing a uniform. If you don't have to think about it, you just get up and do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's structure and security.
Structure and security. You don't have to think about it. So when with the advent of democracy, there was a cultural development. It recognized that it would be better to have an educated citizenry and an involved citizenry. So what were the disadvantages of democracy as compared with the monarchy? Yeah.
Everybody had different wants and needs.
Different wants and needs. What else? Who are good history majors?
Yeah.
Well, think about it. Think about the disadvantages now of being in a democracy. There's some choice, but there's not that much power. So it's frustrating. You have to think. You have to educate yourself. And it's confusing. How many of you have voted yet? Anyone? This year or next year? So when you think about it, how do you feel about having that right and privilege? What's that? What's that?
I'll do that one with the two yens, especially for presidential
elections. It's not your one vote, it's our aggregate demographic. That's the problem. That's why it's all stuck.
And if they only your House of Representatives, whether they voted in your favor or not.
So do you experience already, like when you think about a monarchy, of course we're projecting back, but it's relatively simple. God decreed by divine right who was going to rule, and that's what happened. You know, and periodically there were young upstarts and there were battles fought. But generally, the majority of the population didn't have to think about it. We have to think about it. We're not sure who to trust. We're not sure who's paying for the messages that we're getting. We're not sure how accurate it is. We're not sure what it all means. Government's incredibly complicated. It's billions and billions of dollars, so it's very hard to know what one thing means as compared to the other, what its effect is going to be. We can't possibly know enough, and yet we're supposed to decide. So that's one aspect. The other aspect of cultural development that changed over the last 600 years was the movement from religion, doctrine, and superstition as what determined the truth to scientific observation. So think about like 600 years ago, which it was, I mean, things were pretty rough and ready. We were just basically coming out of the Dark Ages. The Dark Ages, almost nobody remembered how to read. There was a highly literate civilization 600 years earlier. Then we entered the Dark Ages, people forgot to read. They didn't know how. They didn't know what books were. Books were magic. A few priests and monks kept the literate culture going with their illuminated manuscripts hidden away in the monasteries. But even government officials couldn't read. It was extraordinary. You know, even though you had, you know, Plato and Aristotle and volumes of work being generated out of the Middle East and Greece and Rome. So 600 years ago, we were just kind of coming out of that, coming back into literate culture. And what determined what was true was very much superstition. So again, what are the advantages of being told what to believe?
It's less dangerous for society.
Less dangerous.
You have less unrest, and even though you may be force-fed, whether they're lies, whether it's truth, you don't think to question it.
Right.
And when you're given this freedom, and you have the right to question it, you're given more freedom.
Right. What were you going to say, Mania?
Like, you know that you're not the only one who believes it, so.
You're not the only one who believes it. So you feel the safety in numbers. You're like everyone else. You feel secure. It's attractive in some ways. I mean, we do it a little bit with the top 10 Billboard songs.
Mm-hmm. It gives people like a guide, like, of what to follow. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to question themselves and that shit that
So how much agony and angst have you guys experienced just choosing a college on a scale of 1 to 10?
10,000?
10,000?
Yeah.
One. Kareem is not stressed.
It was only one.
It was only one choice. Okay. Did you feel okay with that, having only one choice? Did you feel relieved that you only had one choice? Did you wish you had more choices?
No,
college.
I didn't want it, so.
You got what you wanted. And when you had to, you did too. What?
I agree with
her. You agree with her. Why?
I got what I wanted.
You got what you wanted.
Yeah.
So it was simple. What was that?
What I wanted since 10th grade. So that's what I've been working for 2 years. So it was easy.
Now imagine if you only had one choice and it wasn't a choice you liked. How would you feel about that?
That happened to me with high school. That's what I'm doing. When I got my acceptance to high school, I got denied from every school except Bodine, and I'd never been here before, so I didn't want to come here, but then I had to come here, so I just went with it. I didn't complain about it.
I had that exact same situation.
And then I got accepted once I started coming here, but I was like doing that, so. Like, all my schools accepted me after 2 weeks of being at Bodine, so I just stayed here. So, I mean, if I had to do something, then just
you'd accept it.
Yeah.
So, can you start to see that, because for most people, having a lot of choice for college is overwhelming. You know, and even for some of you, choosing between the choice between one school or another, weighing the financial aid, all of that is creating a lot of stress. It's positive choice, it's positive development. It means that there's more freedom. It means that there's more, but there's more responsibility and there's more demanded of you. Now, that's not just because you're at this particular crossroads in your life. It's a cultural experience. That before, you know, if you were a serf and your dad was a serf, your grandfather was a serf, you were going to be a serf. And that was basically how it was going to go, unless you went off and fought the Crusades and found some plunder and came back and were able to recreate yourself. But it was pretty, the odds weren't in favor. You weren't going to have much mobility. We have a lot more mobility. You have mobility about where you're going to live. You have mobility about how you want to dress, what you want to listen to, what TV station do you want to watch. And that's all happened relatively recently. Those changes started, you know, with urbanization and with the advent of postmodernity, the French Enlightenment. But we're all experiencing that. And so that's why everyone says they're confused, they don't know where to go, they don't know where to turn to, they don't know what religion to believe in, they don't believe in the religion of the past, they don't necessarily trust their elected officials, they don't necessarily trust the media, don't necessarily trust the legal system. All of those certainties have basically been taken away from us. And there's not much that replaces it yet. We don't have a positive model of a social structure that we feel provides for the freedom that we have with a higher order of support and integration. So that's why there's stress. It's not just because everyone's on their cell phone and technology and you can't turn it off and, you know, there are too many choices. It's not just because of that. It's really because the deeper social institutions aren't giving us the guidance that we want. We had that discussion a couple weeks ago. Well, what's morality? What's right and wrong? You wouldn't really ask that question if you lived in France and in rural France in the 1400s. You wouldn't even think to ask that question. You wouldn't be able to self-reflect in that way. Who do you like? Who do you want to be in a relationship with? Who do you want to marry? Those weren't questions that people asked. They didn't have that freedom of choice. So now, there's a lot of positive aspects to that, but there really is a tremendous amount of deep-seated confusion. And as you start to develop and get your adult life together and start experimenting with that, you're going to have to make some choices, which will be conscious or unconscious. And the way you choose to create structure for yourself is going to be an interesting thing. It's going to be interesting to see how you do it. If you were confused, who would you go to first? If you had like a... What was that? If you were confused, say you had a major life question, like you could go on to grad school, you could get married, you could stay in the States, you could move to Indonesia. Who would you go to? How would you figure it out? What system would you use to figure it out? Who would you? You talk to your mom.
I talk to Corinne's mom as well.
You talk to her mom. You talk to yourself, and how would you try to figure it out?
Well, I would try to think of everything that I know about those decisions, and then try to see if anything that I know is relevant enough to actually make that concrete one and done decision. Then, if not, and I'm feeling uncertain, then I'd ask people who have more life experience.
You'd ask people with more life experience.
Good old fashioned pros and cons.
Pros and cons. And how would you wait? How would you know what's a pro and what's a con?
Well, see, that's where my mom comes in. She's really good at, like, letting you figure it out kind of there and pushes you in the right direction, and you don't even know that that's what's going on, and then at the end you're like, oh yeah, I actually do know what I want. And you feel good about your life.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would also be able to consult choice. I mean, you know, you may not know much about this subject. I mean, is this subject going to lead me to what I want? Is this subject going to have any type of advantage?
You don't know.
Or sort of
what's that?
What's
my
mind? You know which side you want to be.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So you go with what you want and what you think is right.
And then we either do good, we fall flat on our faces, and then we become the ones who like the
right. So, but there's no external. What's interesting about all your possibilities is there really isn't an external system or structure that's helping to guide you. You wouldn't necessarily figure out what's going to make you a better citizen and go by that. You wouldn't necessarily go to what's going to make you a more obedient serf under your ruler. All of the external mirrors that you would have in this earlier culture that would tell you what's right or wrong, you wouldn't have the church to tell you this will make you good in the eyes of our doctrine. So you wouldn't have any of those things. You go to an individual you trust, you go to yourself, you go to your intuition. So that's an interesting state of affairs. It's just a very interesting cultural phenomena. And when you go and spend time in places where postmodernity is not as strong, in parts of Asia, or parts of Africa, parts of Central America, you really feel the difference. Now, a lot of what happens is when people go and travel, when people from postmodern countries go and travel in countries where postmodernity hasn't hit so hard, it's a relief. I spent a couple years in the remote villages in North India. It was a total relief. You know, in the Tibetan plateau, there's not much to think about. You eat the exact same thing every single day. You either eat dal and rice or you eat, barley and mutton. I was vegetarian, so I didn't eat mutton, but they ate barley and mutton. And that was what you did. And everyone seemed pretty happy. You know, from the outside, when you can't really speak the language, everyone seemed really happy. They knew who they were going to marry. They knew what they were going to do. They knew what they were going to plant. The big things that happened were one of the yaks would die, or, somebody would get blessed by a llama or something like that, but not much really happened. And there was an extraordinary ease and happiness. It's very attractive, but it's not very sophisticated. Not necessarily, but for those of us who were raised in this culture, we can't really go back.
Because when we went to Africa, that's exactly how it was. My only problem was people didn't like that I didn't wash up, but I would love to live that way. I loved it. I didn't want to come back. You didn't have to make any decision in life. You didn't do anything. Like, it's like your basic goal in life was
to function.
Like, you didn't do anything. Like, I liked it. Like, when you come here, you have all these financial problems and I gotta pay for you. Like, every little stress that we stress about here doesn't even matter there. And I like it. I don't like it. It's not boring. Like, you're happy every day. Like, you dance every night. Like,
yeah, we like
it's objective.
You get to see the scenery every, like, it was the best.
You never want to go somewhere else. I mean, imagine staying in Boudin your whole life. You don't want to go to
You're born to be a farmer.
Find new opportunity.
Hang on one sec. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I just feel like the whole thing with going. I think the whole thing is like a different mindset. Like, mentally, if you could do it, like, I know how Freema is, so I think she may be able to go and do that. You know, that's not for everybody. And I feel like part of it is because, like, I think it kind of has to do with, like, the wants and desires. Like, the wants and desires of the people in that village are different from the wants and desires of the people here. Like, because I think they may feel like, oh, where do I stand, like, in the village, like, if they even think of that, or, like, just in their own life, where they stand. Versus like somebody like me, like I'm an IB student, and I feel I have to more think about like where do I stand in terms of me in the world, mm-hmm. and like I did like a lot of things in my high school career, but then I still think like I'm kind of minuscule in comparison to the world, like you know. So I think it's just like the mind, like the mentality of you know the modern people,
right.
and then the people that you know. Didn't get hit so hard by you know the modern world.
Yeah.
Cause I think like you said, like a lot of people can't go back.
Right.
Like there's no doubt in my mind that those people probably could be trained to live this way. Like you know what I mean? Like if they were introduced now, like they came to America,
sure.
like they would be able to, you know, get in. And I think it would be hard for people to go back and to live like that.
Right. Definitely. Definitely. But you can see the lack of, you can see what we're talking about. We have more complex minds. We have more complex choices. We're aware of so much that you can't go back to before that. You can choose to live a simpler life. You can choose to live in that environment, but you will still know the complexity that we've had, which is very different than, you know, being the sort of 40th generation in the same sort of 10-mile radius. And doing the same thing, and you know, it's also a more precarious existence generally. So this is part of contextualizing our experience. So when you start feeling overwhelmed by all the choices you have, or apathetic because you have too many choices and you're just fed up and you don't really care. And there's so many choices that you feel like whatever you decide doesn't really matter. How could it possibly make such a big difference since there are so many choices? And you start feeling that way, you want to start realizing that your experience isn't just your experience. It's a product of cultural development. So figuring out how to find and create structures that are that we can bounce ourselves off, that are more objective, that are going to help us, because not everybody has a mother like Karina, you know, or you can go and say, oh yeah, go ask me the right question so I can figure it out. Then we need something that's more reliable. And that's going to be basically the next step in cultural evolution. That we're either going to do that successfully or we're going to do that unsuccessfully. And right now you feel that there are a lot of tensions in culture where some of the unsuccessful attempts to create external structures are beginning to fall apart. So like large corporations have been basically choosing for us a lot of things through their advertising. I mean, when I grew up, it was milk. You were supposed to drink milk every single day, and a little thing of milk would make you healthy. Now, I really believe that. I have this deep-seated belief. I don't drink milk, but I have this deep-seated belief that because I grew up with those little red milk cartons, and that's what they told us in first grade. And you start to say, well, as it turns out, a lot of children have allergies to milk. They don't really believe that anymore. But the milk industry, the government sponsored the milk industry to help raise the milk industry. And it's a long system of. So those are the kinds of things that are guiding our choices right now. And some of them are beginning to fall apart, which is good. But we're experiencing some social upheaval, social unrest. And that's not going to, it's going to take an intelligent population to respond to that. And that's a lot of what's going to be on your shoulders, really, you know, in the next sort of 25 years. So why do you think meditation would help? Why would I bring up all of this in a meditation program?
Isn't meditation about awareness?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else?
So you can be more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And they're natural, and I guess we can learn to separate our personal emotions and feelings out.
Yeah. What else? Yeah, that's great. What else? A little more relaxation? You're not sure. You have to work at it. Yeah, no, it's not a freebie. Yeah, the body scan's a little bit free.
When you start out meditating, it's a little bit more relaxing. I think you have to work on it a lot for it to make it noticeable difference.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Quiet class today. All right, good. What? It's overwhelming, right?
A little bit. But, I don't know. I feel like we touch on a lot of overwhelming things in here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's part of it. It's part of getting used to being okay with feeling overwhelmed. And feeling slightly, because we could do meditation that would we could do yoga and meditation, just relax. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it would be enough. So I'm kind of the bearer of bad tidings. Good, let's do some meditation. How many want to do a body scan? That's the free relaxation. I think everyone wants a free. How many want a breath? How many want, you know, like the breath? How many want open awareness? All right, body scan it is. All right, good. All right, let's. So imagine that you can breathe through the top of your head. And when you take an in-breath, you're breathing in white light through the top of your head. And breathe in and let that light pour down on the inside of your head. Covering the back of your forehead. The back of your skull, down into the cavities behind your eyes, behind your nose and your nasal passages. Feel that light bathing the back of your jawbone, filling the space inside your head, pouring into the tip of your chin. Take another deep breath and breathe in warm light and fill the entire area in the middle of your brain. As you fill your head with light, experience the tension and the tiredness, the staleness, exhaling out, breathe in light through the top of your head, and exhale the tension and staleness out through your nose. Now breathe in through the top of your head. And pour that light down through your head into the back of your neck. Filling that space between the spinal column and your skull with ease. Pouring that light down your neck, resting your vocal cords, your throat, as you breathe in light to your spinal cord, feel yourself sitting up more tall, Now breathe in through the top of your head and pour the light straight into the top of your shoulders. Let it pour down the top of your back, over your shoulder blades, and as you pour that light down, feel that all the tiredness, the tension, the staleness in the muscles of your back are falling away down to the floor. Now breathe in a big column of light and send that light into the tops of the top of your lungs, into your chest area. Feel that light expanding the space around your heart, around your lungs, in between all of your ribs. Feel how light the upper part of your body is now. And how dull and heavy the lower part is. Now take a deep breath and send that light down your shoulders and pour it into your arms, your upper arms, your elbows, down your lower arms and your wrists, and through all of your fingers. Exhale all the tiredness and staleness out through your fingertips. Take a deep breath in. Exhale down through the lower part of your torso, around your stomach and intestines, into your hip cavities, inhale, take a deep breath, and send the light straight into your thighs. Bathe those large thigh bones and the long muscles around them. Feel the light pooling in your knees, behind your kneecaps, and send the light down through your calves and shins. Now breathe in through the top of your head and send that light quickly all the way down into your ankles, bathing all the small bones in your ankles. Send the light through the top of your feet, feel your heel, the soles of your feet, the balls of your feet behind your big toes, and all the way into each of your toes. And exhale the tension and tiredness out through your toes. Let it pour into the floor. Now let your body just float on top of your chair. Allow your whole self to absorb the experience of lightness, of ease. Feel how much space you were able to create. And on the next inhalation, you can open your eyes. So we're almost done. Good luck on your, do you have exams next week?
Yes.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we'll, next week we'll be together on Friday. That's right. So we won't have Tuesday because I think their exam's Tuesday. All right.
So we need to put the library back together before you go to Miss Glenn.